This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas is known as a state that produces not just great music, but also music innovations, the original twist on old song traditions that spin into new genres and subgenres of music that are worth shouting about. Michael Corcoran writes about it in his new rewritten book, All Over the Map, True Heroes of Texas Music.
When I first did the book in 2005, it was basically an accumulation of newspaper articles I'd written, and it was done sort of hastily, and I really wasn't the researcher that I am now. I was just basically a guy who had a job during the day, and I would review, you know, Janet Jackson albums one day, and I would do like a Ronnie Dawson article the next, and it was sort of, you know, hastily thrown together. So you want another crack at it. I wanted every chapter to be perfect. And there were certain things that were either oversights or mistakes or didn't go as far as I could have on a subject. And so I just went back and really delved into it.
Which artist do you think that you included into this new edition of All Over the Map that you neglected having last time?
Well, I guess a good example would be I have Bobby Nelson in this one. The original version had Willie Nelson, but Bobby Nelson's really a much more interesting story. A story of a brother and sister who've been playing music together now for 80 years. To me, that's an incredible story. It's much better than really the Willie Nelson story. It's more unique, and also through the story of Bobby Nelson, you tell the Willie Nelson story. Bobby was the older sister, and you learn the story of how Willie, you know, learned to play guitar and play music. The first time that their grandparents showed them, they showed Willie how to play one part of the guitar, and they showed Bobby how to play one part of the piano. And Willie at age 4 and Bobby at age 6, they just looked at each other and their eyes lit up. It's like they were playing a song. So she plays a song, you know, she always has one spot, you know, it's one spotlight each night with Willie Nelson and family. She usually does an instrumental like, I think it's called Way Over Yonder, you know, sort of a ragtime or, you know, instrumental piano song that she does. But, you know, she's very much happy to be in the background. She wants Willie to be up front, you know, it's just a really great story of a sister supporting a brother and a brother idolizing his sister. He, you know, Willie always says that whenever we play, Bobby's the best musician on the stage. And nobody else, Bobby certainly wouldn't say that. She's the most humble person I've ever met.
So your book looks at the music of Texas. It's a journey throughout Texas, and you say that Texas just basically just produces musical innovators.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look back at the very first great electric guitar players of blues, T-Bone Walker, of jazz, Charlie Christian, of country music, you know, Bob Dunn, they were all in Texas at the time. And, you know, partly that's because of there's various reasons, but one of them is that Texas is the first state in the Union to have large populations of both Hispanics and African Americans, and the Mexicans brought the guitars to Texas, and so you have that sort of, you know, sharing, and then also you have the polka music coming from the German and Czech settlers coming up from Galveston, and they built these large dance halls, larger than most venues, and so the bands had to play louder, and then you had these people work in the oil fields, and they're coming out on a Saturday night, and they're boisterous, and it's a big party. And so you have Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, you know, establishing drums and horns. And the idea was that you had to play over the crowd. And then when that became too expensive, then you had people like Ernest Tubb, you know, inventing honky tonk music, having an electric guitar in a group for the first time, playing country music. And so I just think that, you know, there's various reasons why Texas has so many innovators. You know, partly it's the span of the state and the crowd. And probably at the very basis of it all is that in Texas, you make music to make people dance. I think the musicians of all types of music realize that the core of what they're playing is to get people to dance. And through that comes innovation.
What's a good song to play here?
Walking the Floor Over You by Ernest Tubb.
I'm walking the floor over you. can't sleep a wink, that is true. I'm hoping and I'm praying as my heart breaks right in two. Walking the floor over you. You left me and you went away. You said that you'd be back in just a day. You've broken your promise and you left me here alone. I don't know why you did, dear, but I do know that you're gone. I'm walking the floor.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're speaking with Michael Corcoran. His book is All Over the Map and The True Heroes of Texas Music. We'll be right back.
As my heart breaks right in two, walking the floor over you.
If you got the money, I've got the time. We'll go honky-tonkin' and we'll have a time. We'll make all the night spots dance, drink beer and wine. If you got the money, honey, I've got the time.
That's the song, If You've Got the Money, by Lefty Frizzell. And we're talking about Texas music. The book is All Over the Map, True Heroes of Texas Music, by Michael Corcoran. He has been writing about Texas music for a long, long time. He has a lot of great personal stories of some of the musicians of the state. So, Michael, why is this song and why is Lefty somebody that people should get to know?
Well, Lefty Frizzell really invented a new way to sing. You know, George Jones is recognized generally as the greatest country, male country singer of all time, and his very first record was rejected because it sounded too much like Lefty Frizzell. And Merle Haggard has acknowledged his debt. I mean, Lefty's phrasing, he had sort of like a jazz phrasing that was unheard of in Texas music before, and or any kind of country music, really. And that's sort of, you know, that's kind of what I go for when I chose the people that I profiled. It's like I'm looking for innovators, first of all. And then I'm also looking for people with good stories and people with talent. You know, and if you're an innovator, you don't need the other two. And I think Lefty Frizzell just basically invented a new way to sing in country music, which is major. He actually retired from music. He had a stint in prison for statutory rape when he was a teenager and decided he had to give up the honky-tonk life because it was, you know, some groupie in the backseat of a car or something like that. And it's been like 6 months in jail. What happened was he got a call one day that there was a singer who was sick out in Big Spring, Texas, a club called the Ace of Clubs. And so he filled in for him. And in a way, that is, you know, the Cavern Club was to the Beatles. The Ace of Clubs, you know, in Big Spring was to honky-tonk music. Lefty Frizzell built up a following. And after about a year of just packing the club, you know, word came all the way to Dallas, which is, I think, about maybe 400 miles away. And there was a man there named Jim Beck, who was a great producer. Columbia Records actually moved all their country recordings to Dallas, you know, during that time because of Jim Beck. And so Lefty Frizzell went in, and his very first, you know, song he recorded with Jim Beck was If You've Got the Money, I've Got the Time, which became a sensation. And after that, he had, you know, every song was number one. He had three songs in the top 10 at one time, which even Hank Williams didn't have. But his glory years were short-lived because Jim Beck ended up dying. Tragically, he was, you know, cleaning his equipment with a solvent, and he inhaled it and ended up going to the hospital and dying about a week later. And so after that happened, Don Law, the producer from Columbia Records, ended up moving all the operations back to Nashville. And that's why Nashville, not Dallas, is the home of country music right now.
Here's more Lefty Frizzell, Always Late.
Always late with your kisses. Won't you come to my arms, sweet darling, and stay? Always late with your kisses. Why, oh, why do you want to do me this way? Think I can wait when you know you're always late, always late with your kisses. Why, oh, why do you want to do me this way?
You're looking at different types of music in Texas, okay? Not just, you know, country music or rock and roll music. You're looking at all sorts of different types of music that sprung from the state. And so do you think Texas certainly has, it's not just one type of music, and that's another part of the state that makes it unique?
Yeah, I mean, I have a chapter on DJ Screw and the Ghetto Boys. I'm not really big on hip-hop, but what DJ Screw did as far as slowing down the beat and giving it that sort of psychedelic, you know, bass sound to it was copied all over. I mean, I was looking for, you know, another thing about Texas is that in the 20s and 30s, the most popular form of entertainment was cowboy movies. And it was popular with all ages, all races, black people, white people, old, young. They all loved cowboy movies, and most of them came from Texas. And so there was a lot of swagger to live up to. And I think that's kind of what started it, too. It's like everybody in Texas, it's got that pioneer spirit, and you're rewarded for going further than anybody else. And if you look at T-Bone Walker, when he was playing his electric guitar, at the time it was considered a novelty to play electric guitar. But what T-Bone Walker did was he decided he wanted to make his guitar sound like a trumpet. And, you know, King Curtis wanted to make his saxophone sound like a fiddle. The other thing, too, is in Texas, opposed to other states, you had black people who played blues also played country music and listened to country music. That didn't happen in the Mississippi Delta. You know, Mississippi Delta was pretty much blues. But in Texas, it was just such a cross-pollination of all sorts of sounds. You know, it wasn't the Deep South and it wasn't the West. It was something all its own. And I think Texans have always had that sort of pioneer spirit, not just in music, but in other things.
So what's a good King Curtis song to play here?
I would play Yakety Yak by the Coasters. This was in 1957. It really set the tone for saxophone. Because of this song, the saxophone became the lead instrument of rock and roll, even before the guitar. And it's really because of what King Curtis did on this song and others.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more.
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust fly with that broom. Get all that garbage outside, or you don't go out Friday night. Yaggedy yak.
Don't talk back.
You just put on your coat and hat and walk yourself to the laundry mat. And when you finish doing that, bring in the dog and put out the cat.
Don't talk back.
So you talk about the importance of Texans in inventing the language of electric guitar in blues, jazz, and country. And one of the people who did that is Clarence Gatemouth Brown.
Clarence Gatemouth Brown is really interesting because his father was a fiddler, Fiddler Tom, they called him. He was influenced by T-Bone Walker as a guitar player, but Gatemouth always, you know, he would pull out the fiddle, too. He'd play fiddle at his shows, and some of the blues audiences were kind of outraged at first because you didn't mix country and blues at the clubs. But, you know, Gatemouth, he didn't care. I interviewed him, you know, near the end of his life, and I interviewed him at an IHOP in Beaumont, and he was smoking weed in the smoking section of the IHOP, you know, and it was like he was just a real feisty guy, and nobody told him what to do. And if you told him stop playing fiddle, he would play more fiddle. You know, that's just the way he was. And he had a real defiant, you know, side to him. And he didn't play with a pick, so his guitar style was just completely instinctive. And I think if you listen to a song like Okie Dokie Stomp, it's just so dirty, you know, and it's got those It's got the sort of ghost notes in there, which is T-Bone Walker style, was very clean. And then Gate Mouth comes out and adds his own twist to it. And that's another important thing with Texas musicians. They would be inspired by somebody, but they put their own little thing to it, and it became something different. But Okie Dokie Stomp, I think, is something that I don't think T-Bone Walker could have played that song, but Gate Mouth could have played some of T-Bone Walker's songs.
So that was Gate Mouth Brown playing Okie Dokie Stomp. Does this have any sort of regionalism for Texas? I know that in your book, you really look at how different parts of the state have created different types of music.
Well, yeah, he was from East Texas, close to Louisiana. So there was definitely a Louisiana feel to it. And, you know, he lived last years of his life in Louisiana. And then if you go up to, like, Dallas, it was definitely more of a you know, because they had Deep Ellum in the 20s, people like Blind Lemon Jefferson and Blind Willie Johnson and some of the early guitar people came out of there, so it became a really guitar-centric, you know, area of Texas. And then you go to San Antonio, which I think really San Antonio in the 30s was probably the most fertile decade of music in Texas history, because, you know, not only did you have Robert Johnson recorded there in 1936, his very first recordings, and you had blues history, but you also had Jimmy Rogers lived there. And Jimmy Rogers was pretty much the blueprint for country music. And then you had Ernest Tubb lived there for a while, and Jack Teagarden, the great jazz trombonist. I mean, San Antonio was the place to be in the 30s. On top of that, you have Lydia Mendoza in 1934. You know, she recorded Mal Hombre, which is still the anthem. And it was just a woman with a guitar, which was kind of unheard of in those days, you know, making that music.
Era una chiquilla todavía cuando tú casualmente me encontraste y a merced a tus artes de mundano de mi honra el perfume me llevaste lo que hiciste conmigo lo que todo.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're speaking with music journalist Michael Corcoran about his book, All Over the Map, True Heroes of Texas Music. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we're talking about Texas music.
Case of Janis Joplin, I was always one of those people, like, you know, that thought she was just a screamer, and there really wasn't much to her. She was kind of a one-trick pony. And I saw this documentary called Little Girl Blue. It showed a whole other side to her, her vulnerability. And I started doing more, you know, research on her. And the first time she ever played in New York City, she was on a bill with B.B. King and with Big Brother and Holding Company. they looked at each other backstage and they thought, well, we can't play blues if we're on a bill with B.B. King. We have to get out there and just totally do a deconstruction. And I think in a way that what they were doing was exactly what Iggy and the Stooges were doing and what the New York Dolls were doing, but nobody gives Janis Joplin credit for being a precursor to punk rock. But when you think about it, what she was doing was the same thing. She was basically passion over precision. Growing up in Port Arthur, Texas, in the late 50s, I mean, she was just open to all sorts of ridicule, but she had courage. She stood up to everybody. When I put it all together, I just realized that Janis Joplin was much more than a screecher. You know, she was someone who, you know, she had this vulnerability that she masked with her power. And it was just much more intriguing person to me. And she's someone that I added. She was not in the first book.
Artists that you pick to rock all over the map, true heroes of Texas music. We're talking with Michael Corcoran, the author. So you selected these musicians, and that, yeah, they came from Texas, but do they represent Texas?
Well, I think in a way they do. As far as the pioneering spirit of Texas, the things that Texans hold dear.
You can hear Texas in ZZ Top, for sure.
Yeah.
But can you hear Texas in the 13th floor elevators?
Well, they came out of that whole Texas, you know, hippie rock scene. And I think that, you know, I think when you look at San Francisco, the Summer of Love in the 60s, whatever, a lot of the really key people in that were Texans. You had Chet Helms, who's the promoter before Bill Graham even. He was from Texas. He was from Fort Worth and went to school in Austin. You had Doug Somm, you know, 13th floor elevators. So who was the original? You know, I think that if there's just a way of doing things your own way, you know, that's Texan. Look at Waylon Jennings. He's a good example of someone who could only have come from Texas because he had these influences. He was Buddy Holly's bass player, and yet he came out and had this whole new sound of country music, and then he collaborated with Willie and became the Outlaw Country. He just touched on all these things. He didn't stay in one box. He didn't get stuck with one thing. And I think that, yes, there's not a Texas sound, I don't think. I think it's probably what you're getting at. There's not a Texas sound, but there's a Texas way of doing things. And that's what I was looking for in this book is people that were just out to do something original. That's basically it, just doing something original and sticking to their guns and influencing other people.
From Austin, this is the 13th Floor Elevators with their 1966 hit, You're Gonna Miss Me.
You didn't realize.
innovator from Texas. How about Freddie King? Is he one of those?
Yeah, King definitely, because he had a lot of country style in his guitar playing. You listen to Remington Ride, which is an incredible instrumental. It actually started as a Western swing song by Herb Remington. And when Freddie King got a hold of it, he kept the country in there, but it's also very bluesy. And if you listen to the Allman Brothers later on, they definitely got a lot of their style from Freddie King doing Remington Ride. It's just this whole, a mashup of styles. He also had a lot of emotion. He had a lot of passion in his playing. That's something else, is that in Texas, you're always trying to stand out. You're trying to stand out from the pack. How do you do that? Well, Freddie King did it by, he hit a note. He hit a certain note. And it's just like with Dickie Betts on Whipping Post. You know, Dickie Betts would go for that note and it would just turn your knees to jelly. And that's kind of what Freddie King started, that sort of style. And, you know, Eric Clapton has admitted that when he started off, he was just a Freddie King imitator. Well, I think for the singer-songwriters, it's a lot of it has to do with the physicality of Texas. It's the wide open spaces. You know, Texas singer-songwriters are known for what they leave out of their songs as much as what they put in their songs. People like, you know, Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark and Willie Nelson. It's like so precise, and I think a lot of it was inspired by just the wide open spaces, and also by the sharing. I mean, sharing is a very big part of Texas music. It wasn't always competitive. It's sort of like, we're not New York, we're not L.A., we got to stick together and make something really special out of what we have here. So it's really kind of a tradition, a songwriting tradition that comes out of Texas.
So we're going to go to break now. We'll play some Townes Van Zandt. We're going to come out of the break. You're going to hear some Guy Clark. And I want to talk about the Texas singer-songwriter, a tradition, a little bit more. And this is Michael Corcoran. He's the author of the book All Over the Map, True Heroes of Texas Music. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Well, if I needed you, would you come? Would you come to me and ease my pain? If you needed me, I would come to you. I would swim the seas for to ease your pain. Well, in the night forlorn, all the morning's born, and the morning shines with the lights of love. And you will miss sunrise if you close your eyes, and that would break my heart in two. Sit in the kitchen and cry, run his fingers through 70 years of living, and wonder, Lord, as ever will I drill gone dry. His friends, me and this old man, was like desperados waiting for a train. Like desperados waiting for a train. Well, he's a drifter and a driller, boy Wells, and an old school man of the world. taught me how to drive his car when he's too drunk to. And he'd wink and give me money for the girls. And our lives was like some old western movie, like Desperado was waiting for a train.
That's Guy Clark's Desperado's Waiting for a Train. It is a seminal Guy Clark song. So many of them are evocative of Texas. They tell a Texas story. He didn't like to call himself a craftsman. He really thought of himself as a straight up writer and a poet. And you get that feel. We're talking with Michael Corcoran, author of All Over the Map, True Heroes of Texas Music. And Guy Clark continues to inspire songwriters in Texas. Michael?
Yeah, he didn't have a word out of place. You know, that's the thing about him. He would have, I mean, this is what Rodney Crowell said when I interviewed him. He said that he would throw away lines that other people would kill for because it didn't fit the song. It didn't serve the song. You mentioned that he was a craftsman and that sort of thing. And I always thought that way about him too, but he hated that. He thought he was a poet, and to call him a craftsman was sort of cheapening what he did. In fact, the one time I did interview him, I went to Nashville and we didn't really hit off that well because I was kind of going with the interview was in his workshop. I went down to his basement.
Because he made guitars. He was a luthier.
Yeah, he made guitars, and I was sort of going for that angle, and he just was thinking, like, this guy doesn't get me. And I really didn't at the time. One of the rules for the book was that if someone had been done better, written about better by someone else, that I would not have it in the book. That's why I don't have a chapter on Rocky Erickson, 13-floor elevators, because there's been other things written about them that better than what I could have done. And Guy Clark is the same way. There's a few other articles, you know, that were done, but it just so happened that I needed, I don't know, I just needed someone who represented, who was really the groundswell of the songwriters. And so I decided to put him in, even though it wasn't my best, you know, chapter. I think it fits in okay, you know, because I also have, you know, Towns Van Zandt and some of the other people. I think that I did a better job on Towns than I did with Guy, but he just seemed to fit in, and he's sort of a guy that, you know, you had to put him in there, really, to kind of round everything out. And plus, the other thing, too, is he was from West Texas, and I needed another West Texas person in there. I was kind of, you know, the idea was that this book would be all over the map. The concept is that I would have people all over the map, and then when I looked at the actual map for the cover, we had a lot of wide-open spaces in West Texas, so sometimes it's that way. You know, sometimes there's a rhyme and reason for what you do, and sometimes you just have to go with your gut, and that's kind of how I went with Guy.
In your book, on your map, you have the Butthole Surfers coming from Austin.
Yeah.
What's up with that? They're from San Antonio. Austin has enough music.
Yeah.
They don't need to be poaching San Antonio's.
Well, nothing happened with them in San Antonio. They went to, Trinity College? But Gibby Haynes is from Dallas, and they started in San Antonio, just like the Vaughn brothers. Stevie Ray Vaughan started in Dallas, but Austin's where he made it. You know, Austin's where the Butthole Surfers got their sound together. I mean, when they were still in San Antonio, they were basically, you know, kind of playing in their underwear and hitting on pots and pans. You know, it wasn't until they moved to Austin that they started taking it more seriously. And the other thing, too, is that I wrote the story on them in 1986 when they were definitely in Austin, and partly had to do with their house. They had a house that they all lived in next to a drive-in movie theater, and it was just sort of it was kind of like the Spahn Ranch from the Manson family. It was sort of like that, all this debauchery going on. You know, it wasn't San Antonio where I wrote about them. It was in Austin.
other San Antonio bands, artist Esteban Horton, you have him. Yeah. And he was certainly a one of a kind. You write in your book that he would play the same whether or not the bar was empty or full of people, and that is exactly true. I was a bartender at a bar where he played every Thursday night, and it was he would play with the same intensity all out.
Yeah, he was definitely one of a kind and fantastic. I just went to the Tejano Conjunto Festival, and he was definitely missed. You know, there was nobody there that could even come close to Steve Jordan as far as his intensity. I mean, just his musicianship. He was just fantastic. I mean, I think there are like 10 or 15 songs by him, tracks by him, that I don't think anybody's ever matched on the accordion.
Soy de Texas, es mi orgullo ser chicano.
Doug Somm, that's a good example of someone who lived in Austin as long, if not longer than San Antonio, but he was always a San Antonio guy. You know, he would drive to San Antonio to eat lunch, you know, because he didn't like the enchiladas in Austin. And he had the San Antonio soul to his core, and he was really a product of all the music he heard from the blues in the East Side clubs, you know, and the junto music and all the pop music that was big in San Antonio and the rock. And you know, that's what made him so special, is that he didn't stick to one side of music. He did it all.
You know, Austin, they've got some bands there. You know, they can make music there, you know, believe it or not.
The Austin's probably actually my weakest section of the book, you know, because there is no real history in Austin. Austin music history started about 1971, you know, and everywhere else it started in the 20s and 30s. There was no music scene in Austin until the 70s when the Armadillo opened. So I had to sort of pad it with newer people like Don Walser, Alejandro Escovedo, Calvin Russell. Nobody really goes back that far from Austin, because there really was, I guess the only one was, and I put her with Sherman, Texas, but, you know, Arizona Drains learned how to play in Austin at the blind school, which is kind of cheating, but she's, you know, she's probably the most influential female musician in Texas. You know, what she started really became rock and roll. She led the way to Jerry Lee Lewis and Fats Domino. That Pentecostal piano pounding is really the roots of rock and roll.
Yeah.
mentioned Alejandro Escovedo. He is a fascinating musician, but yet he still has not ever broken out, not hit the big time.
No, he's definitely a I don't know if you call him a niche artist or a cult artist. I think Alejandro is sort of an acquired taste, but Alejandro does all right. He's got his fans all over the world.
Ray Price was performing almost to the end.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him when he was 87 years old at Carl's Corner. I think he lived to be 88 or 89. I can't remember, but he could still sing. Great voice, one of the greatest voices ever, and a totally, completely underrated artist. And you wonder how that could be, because everybody thinks Ray Price is this legend, but when you think about it, in 1956, when Elvis Presley was the rage, and all the country people were panicking and thinking they had to be more like rockabilly and stuff, but Ray Price changed, you know, he invented the country shuffle with Crazy Arms. You know, he found a way for people to dance more, and that became a sensation that is still popular. You have people like Dale Watson and, you know, the Wagoneers and, I don't know, Mike and the Moon Pies that are still playing at the Ray Price shuffle. And so he really saved country music in the 50s and then did it again in the 60s. When he started bringing strings to country music and was totally vilified for it. And I went and interviewed him and when he turned 80, on his 80th birthday, they had a show for him in Austin. And I went up to in East Texas to his ranch, and he was raising, you know, fighting chickens. And he was still a country boy. He was wearing overalls and, you know, working his farm. And he moved back to Texas in 1970 because Nashville was calling him a sellout, and so he just came back home and just did his own thing. And I don't know, for some reason he could just really sing his whole life. He sang till the very end. I never saw a bad performance from Ray Price.
Now blue ain't the word for the way that I feel, and the storm's brewing in this heart of mine.
Book all over the map of Michael Corcoran, True Heroes of Texas Music. You're looking at, you know, a lot of the legacy musicians of Texas, bringing a lot of them to the fore who may have been kind of in the background. What about musicians today? Who's making their mark?
Well, I think, you know, let's say from San Antonio, I fell in love, completely in love with a Girl in a Coma a few years ago. I thought they were going to be huge. And I went, actually did a front page story on them. And it was kind of about, the theme was that there'd never been a really huge act out of San Antonio in many years, and this was going to be the act, because I think that they had, you know, they had the punk background. The rhythm section was punk, and Nina Diaz, there's nobody like her as a front person. She was just so captivating. It was almost like Jane's Addiction. You know, she was kind of like the Dave Navarro type, you know, as far as the way you couldn't take your eyes off her. And they did, you know, they did pretty well, but it's they didn't blow up like I thought they would. So I my forte is not predicting which new act is going to blow up. It's more like which act from the past should you pay more attention to?
Well, Girl in a Coma is not in the past. They're still creating music, or Nina Diaz certainly is. And so let's end with some Nina. Thank you, Michael Corcoran, author of All Over the Map, True Heroes of Texas Music. And this is The Source on Texas
Picture
Public Radio.
Just play.